Good morning and welcome to the statewide conversation with Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It's Friday, May 15th. It's your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during this COVID-19 pandemic. If you didn't get a chance to send an email or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton, live from KEXC Studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We thank you for listening today. We are teaming up with community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, to bring you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. And we give you the opportunity to ask questions of our elected officials. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joins us again this week. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, Heidi. So thanks so much for having me.
Good morning. Now, I enjoy talking to you each week, but I hate that we still have to talk, that we are still in this state. So if you don't mind, I wonder if we can begin with the news this week concerning the stay-at-home order in Minnesota. What has changed and why has it changed?
Sure, absolutely. And Heidi, I will make the commitment that I want to continue to talk to you post-pandemic.
Good, thank you.
So we know that COVID-19 has exceeded the reality of Minnesota's even harshest winters at this point for so many Minnesotans. And I think I've mentioned this on our conversations, that the point of the stay-at-home order was really designed. It was designed to give us time to prepare, and we've used that time wisely. We've built out hospital capacity, increased the number of ventilators and ICU beds, sourced critical care and personal protective equipment, and launched a pretty aggressive testing strategy across the state to test every symptomatic Minnesotan. At this point, we are staying steady in hospitalizations, and we believe that we can handle it if we have an increase in cases as more people are moving about. However, that means that we have to do it slowly and cautiously, strategically turning up the dial, but being very clear. We talk about dials and we use that metaphor because if we have to turn them back, we are ready to do that. As we consider that we can safely reopen, we must also take into account three super critical factors. And those are, first, how close you are to another person in any given setting or activity. Second, how long you are in close proximity to that individual. And third, how predictable that setting actually is. So, for example, walking past people in a hardware store wearing a mask is less risky and more predictable than sitting for a meal in a crowded restaurant. And so starting on May 18th, we are turning the workplace dial. So non-critical businesses like retail stores and Main Street businesses can reopen if they have a safety plan and operate at no more than 50% occupancy. We're also turning the social dial slightly. And so when the stay-at-home order ends on May 18th, we are replacing it with a new order that brings back more social interaction so that, we know these are important in life, but we also need folks to continue to stay safe. And so Stay Safe Minnesota will ask people to stay close to home and limit travel to what is still essential. But now we can gather with friends and families in groups of 10 or less, also continuing to practice good hand washing and hygiene and wearing masks whenever possible. And in all cases, we are asking Minnesotans not to gather in large groups. All gatherings, whether backyard barbecues, religious meetings at a church, synagogue, or mosque, are limited to 10 and require the ability to social distance. So that's an update, but we, we've also had conversations around salons, bars and restaurants, and are working to determine what needs to be in place for those businesses to safely reopen, both for stylists and their clients. And that is what we're determining now. The earliest that would happen would be June 1st.
Okay. Well, on that note, I got an email this morning from someone from northern Minnesota. They said they are a senior with underlying conditions, and they feel completely abandoned by the lifting of the stay-at-home order. They didn't feel like there was science in the governor's announcement Wednesday, no acknowledgement of the dire models for Minnesota, and no longer any sense that we are in this together. It leaves me heartbroken and more afraid than ever. Your thoughts?
So this was an incredibly difficult decision for the governor to make, and was not made without extensive consultation with our public health experts. But what I will also say is that, you know, we are still in this. We are absolutely still in this together. And for our seniors and for our community members with underlying health conditions, we need to continue to protect, you know, to practice good social distancing, good hygiene, and we've made a commitment to ensure that folks who need to remain home can get the groceries, the medicine, and additional support that they need during this time. And with all of these decisions, there are a multitude of data points. We looked at our stock of critical care supplies and personal protective equipment, how we're coming on testing. We're looking at the feedback that we're also getting from businesses and health experts. So we know that COVID-19 falls harder on older adults and those with underlying conditions. But we also know that the stay-at-home order cannot last indefinitely. That's just that it has economic costs, and we are hearing that piece as well. But costs on the health and well-being of Minnesotans that we're trying to protect. So in addition to expanding our testing capacity and procuring more protective equipment, a critical part of the preparation was also creating a coordinated response for vulnerable and at-risk populations. This includes our five-point plan on long-term care facilities, increasing hospital and healthcare resources for those who do fall sick. You know, and we're continuing to ask folks to stay at home as much as they can. We are absolutely, again, in this together, and we have to rely on one another to do this safely. And to be very clear, if it looks like cases are spreading rapidly in any community, we know that we need to turn the dial back to slow the rate of infection. This isn't easy, and we have incredibly hard days ahead of us. But we're ready and vigilant and watching out for our most vulnerable. And we'll just say again, you know, that the governor for the last 2 months has continued to say that the stay-at-home order has really been grounded in the need for us to be able to prepare, that there is a hospital bed for you if you get sick, that there is support there for you if you get sick. And Minnesotans created this opportunity for us to prepare, and that is why the governor made the decision to reopen.
That's Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You're listening to a statewide conversation from AMPRS and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. We had a question from St. Paul about the bars and restaurant closure. Once it's lifted or modified, will the state have guidelines in place so that there isn't a rush to fill those establishments? My concern is that such a rush could possibly cause the virus to spread. How do we avoid that?
So, you know, I share those concerns, which is, and frankly, we're seeing the free-for-all right now in Wisconsin, which is deeply troubling, with folks who are shoulder-to-shoulder and are not wearing masks or practicing good hygiene. And so I share those concerns, and that's why we're prepared to turn the dials back if we can see, you know, if we see an unacceptable rise in cases. But our Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, Health and Labor and Industry are working closely with businesses and labor leaders to develop like the best practices for safe reopening. When we announced the stay-at-home order would expire beginning Monday, May 18th, our team already had the guidelines in place so that the single shops and retail establishments knew how to open up in a manner that was both safe for workers and for customers. And these included guidelines that the stores must open at 50% capacity or less, that social distancing can be done, and other safety measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. But I want to be absolutely clear about this point. that there are protections for workers that are critically important to this transition. And so workers who are concerned about the health and safety practices of their jobs are encouraged to call the Department of Labor and Industry. And that number is 651-284-5050. 651-284-5050. Because we want to make sure that workers feel safe. They do not need to return back to work if they are returning to unsafe conditions. For people with underlying conditions who are employees and cannot get returned to work, they can continue to collect unemployment insurance. And that is critically important. Those are some of the safety practices that we have in place for workers. And we know that there are a lot of folks who are eager to visit their favorite restaurants and bars, and the temptation to rush out there on the first night is strong, but, like, be a good neighbor. We are urging Minnesotans to continue practicing social distancing, wearing masks when in public, and to wash hands frequently, to do everything to protect themselves and to protect their loved ones during this time. And, you know, Heidi, I don't mean to break it down and make it this blunt, but I think this is the messaging that some folks need to hear. Just don't be a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the option is still there. You're supporting your favorite restaurant or bar with takeout or curbside pickup if it's too full once we get to that point in the state.
That's correct. And I think, you know, my family and I have done curbside pickup quite frequently during the stay-at-home order. And I can tell you that my family is not in a rush to go back to restaurants and bars to sit down at a table. We will continue to stay at home as much as possible, support local businesses in the way that we can and in a way that feels safe for our family. And everyone needs to make that decision.
Yeah, I have kind of a personal question for you, because I know we're kind of, as humans, we should be kind of keeping track of where we're going, too, just in case we do get it. Are you doing that in your family?
Absolutely. So I will be very candid with you. The places that I go right now, I go to the park with my daughter, and that is about it. My husband is the one who has been going to Costco and Target, practicing good hygiene when he is, coming home from there. But we haven't ventured out a lot. And one of the reasons why is, you know, my daughter has an underlying health condition, and we take that very seriously, and we'll continue to maintain much of the behavior that we've done over the last 2 months. And I anticipate that many other Minnesota families will do the same thing.
Yeah, and your family suffered loss. You know exactly what's at
stake. That is exactly correct. We take this very, very seriously.
Yeah. We had an email this week about education. This someone wrote, Governor Walz just announced that Minnesota schools can do hybrid classes for summer school, including holding some classes physically in the schools. At the same time, we're now hearing about new concerns and severe complications in kids who get COVID-19. Are we putting our kids at risk just so parents can go back to work instead of moving the dial slowly? In the last 48 hours, it feels like we've cranked the dial and we're jumping into the deep end with no life jacket, and we're still learning how to swim. Your thoughts?
So, you know, by slowly turning the dial for school settings this summer, we can better serve Minnesota students and families and provide more opportunities for in-person learning and social interactions that are critical for learning. But to be clear, there's some pretty significant guidance in that executive order. So, for example, the ratio of students to teachers, if they are at a school and not participating in distance learning, is six to one. And so, you know, which allows for that social distancing to occur. And so this executive order gives schools flexibility they need to meet the unique needs of individual learners. And, you know, Heidi, we talked about this before, but we have a significant opportunity gap between our white children and kids of color and Indigenous children, and we are watching that gap widen. So we have to be able to do two things at one time, to connect with students, give them the support that they need, but also do it in a safe way. And I want to clarify that the summer school EO, you know, what it covers is for the 10% of the student population that already participates in summer school and those who need extra support as a result of distance learning. So multilingual learners, children in special education, and students who need credit recovery. And it's not the entire student population. But there's detailed guidance on this hybrid model. And as I mentioned, that ratio is really important. Schedules alternate so that portions of the class can come through to enter and exit, and that cleaning and PPE, personal protective equipment, are required. We're still discussing what the fall looks like. And again, as the parent of a child with an underlying condition, I'm going to be paying very, very close attention to this. We'll learn from this model, but also, you know, figure out what the future looks like for schools. And I hear that I'm assuming a parent who asked that question, because that is certainly something that is on my heart and mind. And if I wouldn't send my child back to school, my expectation can't be to ask other Minnesotans to do the same thing. And so unless it is safe and we are prepared to really support the health and overall emotional well-being and learning opportunities for our kids.
We had another email that came in this week. If you didn't get a chance to email, you can send something in to covid@ampers.org. The question's about tribal relations. Does Minnesota have good enough communication with sovereign nations in Minnesota to avoid a situation like in South Dakota, where the state is trying to block the checkpoints on highways by the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribal Nation?
So the short answer is yes. And, you know, I really appreciate this question. I want to be very clear. We are not South Dakota and have been really intentional to build these relationships with our tribal leaders. And good relationships are built on strong foundations. Last year, the governor issued Executive Order 1924 that strengthened the state's recognition of the sovereignty of our 11 tribal nations and committed to meaningful government-to-government consultation. Also required tribal liaisons at each state agency. And we recently opened up, just actually slightly before the pandemic began, our Office of Tribal State Relations in the governor's office. So we're now learning on the strength and the trust of those relationships that we started building over a year ago. And during the pandemic, we've had daily calls with our tribal leaders and weekly calls with urban Indian leaders to make sure that we're connected. Tribes are sovereign nations, and the only way to move forward during these unprecedented times is to do so collaboratively and as partners. So I am grateful for the leadership of our tribal governments across the state and our partnership. And my heart breaks over what we are seeing in South Dakota. And we support our tribal governments and how they determine the best way to protect their own people. We are behind them 100%. We're not going to be like South Dakota and challenge a tribe's authority, which I believe to be the supreme law of the land and treaty rights. We are partners, and if the need arises, we'll do everything that we can to support our Native communities across the state.
Now, this next question comes from Sherry in northern Minnesota, and I don't think you can exactly answer this, but her question is, my son is planning his wedding for the last weekend in June to be held outdoors in northern Minnesota. 200 guests are invited. Do you think this can happen?
Sherry, this is the hardest question, and this is, I can't tell you how many texts and emails I get from friends across the state who find themselves in a similar position. But I want to say, first of all, Sherry, congratulations to your son and on his engagement. Ultimately, the virus really defines our timeline. I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you where we'll be at the end of June. We made this decision to slowly shift open you know, to more small and predictable workplaces and social settings with really strict safety measures in place. So the measures would be much harder to implement at a wedding with hundreds of guests. And I know this is really difficult, but this is how we keep our friends and family members safe, especially those who are older or have underlying conditions. And I would hate for Sherry, for your son on the, you know, one of the most important days of his life, and you know, to also be the time when someone would fall ill, and then suddenly that the joy of that day is really sucked away because of illness from folks. But people can, to be clear, people can still get married. So, you know, if you still want to get married and then throw that party later on, that might be the way to go. I got married last year, and it was one of the best decisions that I've ever made. But I want to make sure, and the governor wants to make sure, that people are safe. And I do not anticipate that by the end of June, we will be in a place where we can have those large gatherings. That is the last thing to turn on the dial, and we simply are not there yet.
Well, thank you for your honesty. It's not easy there. One of our producers for this program has been following national news and some of the things going on, and they saw an opinion writer, Leanna Wen, in the Washington Post, asking about if we've formally retreated from a goal of containing COVID-19 to one of harm reduction. What would you say the state of Minnesota's take on that is?
Well, I would say, you know, just personally, I desperately want leadership from Washington, frankly, and from this White House. And we haven't seen it, and we've seen goalposts that are changing. I believe that the governor has been very clear in what, you know, the goal was of the stay-at-home order, which was to prepare for, you know, for the illness that is coming, and that is what we're doing. But we continue to work in partnership with healthcare providers, with Mayo, with the University of Minnesota, and with our, you know, our community clinics that are very publicly facing, in the place where I think, you know, for my community, for the Native community, and for communities of color, where folks feel most comfortable getting their care, that those partnerships are really important right now to us for the, you know, for getting people the testing that they need. But we also need to make sure that we're doing testing. The tracing is particularly important. And again, this isn't to say like it's all open and that there's a free-for-all. We still want folks to stay home. We still want people to work from home as much as they can. And we all are waiting on the development of that vaccine, which ultimately I think will be the thing that allows us to move more freely in this state and across the country. But we are not there yet. So we're doing what we can within the state to mitigate the impact of the virus. But we can't keep people locked in their homes forever.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but I've been relying on artists and the talented people in Minnesota to kind of keep me going, watching online performances from Minnesota bands like Bad Bad Hats and Sam Miltich in northern Minnesota. And then I'm also going to reread the Kate DiCamillo's book, Because of Winn-Dixie, which is the statewide book. What's it been like for you? What kind of things are keeping you going in terms of finding some peace and entertainment right now?
For sure. Well, we have a whole host of artists here in Minnesota who are critically important just to our identity as a state, and really are the places where we're finding comfort right now. One of my favorite local Minnesota bands is Fathom Lane. And so I've been listening to their music quite a bit. And just a couple nights ago, they did a virtual performance, and so I tuned into that, and that was important. But you know, Heidi, I want to be very candid with you and tell you that I also, you know, when I find a moment to just just take a breath. I also watch terrible reality television and won't share much more with your listeners about that. But like, I think the most important part here is just a reminder to read a book, take a walk, do what you need to do for your own self-care and mental health in this moment, because this is not normal. This what we are going through collectively right now, there will be art and there will be music and there will be literature that comes out of this time. That shows that folks were, in turmoil and were, very broken. And so as much as we can find those opportunities, to connect with ourselves, and reconnect with each other, even if that's virtually, those will be the things that get us through this uncertain time.
Yeah. Well, before we go, can you give us any ideas on what things are going on right now in the state or what kind of things you're, offices are going to be telling us about in the days to come?
Sure. Well, it is, and it doesn't feel exactly the same, but it is the final weekend of the legislative session. And so we will be continuing to meet with leaders of the House and Senate and try to get some resolution here on things that are really important, like a bonding bill for infrastructure across the state. And that's also jobs as we're looking to recover. I think that, one of our top priorities is making sure that folks have access to housing assistance. This has been an incredibly difficult time for so many folks, which is why the governor signed the executive order on an evictions moratorium. But the second step is really to make sure that we're passing that housing assistance in the amount of $100 million so that if folks are worried about paying their rent or paying their mortgage, that they don't lose their home on top of everything else that is happening right now. And then I just say, access to childcare, the Minnesota Family Investment Program, those are all the things that we're going to be pushing for this weekend to bring some economic security and stability to families all across the state. And so it's go time. If you have a legislator that you want to reach out to, now is the time to do it. So you'll hear quite a bit about that. And also just a quick note, the governor just did a press event with our new Supreme Court Justice, Judge Gordon Moore, who comes from Greater Minnesota, from the Worthington area, is a recovering school board member like me, and is really just a compassionate and wonderful man. And we're excited for that, for a voice from Greater Minnesota that hasn't been there for a while. So he was just seated. He was just announced today, and that's sort of the news that's happening right now for all of us.
Well, next time I'm going to need to know what a recovering school board member means.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, thank you once again for your time, and we look forward to talking with you next week and bringing you more questions.
Thanks so much, Heidi. Take good care and have a good weekend.
You too. That is Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation and the past ones at kaxe.org. And if you would like to ask a question of Peggy Flanagan, email COVID@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KEXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.